Well, some do have to work on Christmas Day, and one man who had to is right opposite me. You'll no doubt know the voice, part of the Channel 10 sports team right throughout the year, Duncan McKenzie McCarr. Good to see you.
Oh, good morning, Brett. Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, it's a fantastic day, fantastic time of the year. And it was a terrific day. It was my first day of working on Christmas Day yesterday, and I was down at the Collingwood Christmas lunch down there with Eddie Maguire, and the whole club puts it on.
It's a great event.
Incredible. Yeah. 40-plus volunteers. They fed 500 of the homeless and disadvantaged down there as well. And Moana Hope was down there. Shani Layton, the Diamonds captain. Travis Varko was there. And Eddie, I mean, he cops a lot of flack, and he's copped a lot of flack this year, but he does a fantastic job with that event. Over 30 years now that the Collingwood Football Club has done that. So for Christmas Day, E. Maguire, you get my three votes. But it was a great Christmas Day. I sort of got into it a little bit late because I was working and I had to do the Boxing Day preparations package for Channel 10.
So you did get to see what the family last night for a little bit.
I did a little bit, but the McKenzie McCarg family Christmas bread, it has a common theme every year. Right. So basically, they have the 2 o'clock lunch. And they have the turkey, the ham, the roast vegetables. But after the first hour, all the McKenzie McCargs start leaving the table. Right. They start peeling off because the dreaded food coma sets in. Yes. So 3 o'clock, my brother's lying on the couch. 4 o'clock, my mum's asleep. And by 5 o'clock, my dad's got his PJs on or his kimono or whatever. So, yeah, it was. I missed all that yesterday, but it was a fantastic day.
It's a fascinating day, Christmas Day. And look, I didn't read out M in Doncaster Reece's text. So if you're still tuning in, she says, sport on Christmas Day is only wanted by selfish people who are not willing to work at themselves and inconvenience others for their own needs. Go work yourself and then see if your opinion changes. So it's one that divides a few. The great Chris Tyler was in here about an hour ago, and he'd love a bit of sport on Christmas Day. We sort of bring this subject up every year, and I to and fro a little bit, but I've got to say it was... for someone that's immersed in it and works a lot at this time of the year through December, January, it was nice to have one day without sport. But everyone's in a different situation, aren't they? I mean, things are going to keep ticking along. And I felt driving around yesterday, there were more things open than what other Christmas days.
Yeah, absolutely. And I heard Chris at the top of last hour talking about the suggestion of, you know, possibly having a big bash game on Christmas night, which I think would work well for families. I mean, if you effectively get a lot of your stuff done in the morning, you know,
it's inevitable. Presents, it's going to happen.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, if you put that at the MCG and you had a Melbourne derby or something like that, people would still turn up. You'd probably get 50,000 there.
94291116 if you want to join the conversation, because Duncan and I are going to certainly look back at some of the memorable moments in sport in 2016. We're going to look forward. It's a huge day of sport as well. So there's a lot to chew the fat about. 94291116, or send us a text 0433981116. Australia v Pakistan today. I mean, the Boxing Day test speaks for itself, regardless of who the opposition is. It's just an amazing day. Where does it sit for you? Because we think sort of AFL Grand Final Day, that is the pinnacle when we're in footy season.
Yeah.
Come the off season, this day is, you know, it's a really special day. I mean, you can sort of feel it just reading the article on Peter Hanscom in the paper this morning, how big an occasion it is for the cricketers who get their chance, and no wonder none of the fast bowlers want to be rested.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's on par with the AFL Grand Final. I mean, if you look at the fact that, you know, the weather's fantastic, it is the festive period, it's a festive time of the year, the sun's out, you've got a player like Peter Hanscom, he's going to be living out a boyhood dream today. Personally, part of me wants the Australians to bowl first, because I want to hear 50 to 60,000 Australians yell out, "Nice, Gary," after Nathan Lyon's third delivery of the match. I reckon that'd be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
That thing has just completely blown off. I mean, effectively, you've got Nathan Lyon, who this thing started off as, I think, as a Facebook page between a couple of mates, and it's blown out to 20 or 30,000 likes now. The whole of Australia is getting behind this concept, so it should be an absolute cracker.
Absolutely. Gone in unchanged. Probably no surprise. I mean, yeah, I was talking to someone yesterday about Hilton Cartwright, and the person opposite me said, "How on earth has he come into calculation, considering the fact that he's not a genuine all-rounder?"
No.
The average, I think, is around 44 with the bat.
Yeah.
And you'd love to be a fly on the wall, wouldn't you? I mean, this not only goes for this particular selection, but think about, you know, just whether it's cricket teams, footy teams, how certain players actually get brought into conversation in a selectors meeting or a match committee meeting. Because it's the ones from left field, wow, you just think, how on earth have they come up?
I think at least bringing them to the conversation is the start of it, so that they can get their heads around, well, maybe I can become an Australian cricketer, maybe I can, you know, live out that lifelong dream. But I think it's a very, very smart move to go in unchanged. I mean, effectively, you've got a team, and the selectors have been copying it, I mean, all year. I mean, Rod Marsh was copying it to the point where he had to effectively resign. I think it's a very, very smart move. Back in the likes of Nick Maddison, I mean, you've got to put these guys on the big stage.
Well, he hasn't had a real crack yet, has he?
No, he hasn't. He hasn't. But he was already sort of copying it. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a great idea to keep these guys, as long as they're winning. I mean, Steve Smith made the point a little bit earlier that, you know, the Australians have won five matches in a row. I mean, it's been quite the turnaround from Hobart. I mean, effectively, the whole team was in crisis, effectively. So I think it's the right move. Keep these guys in. Maybe back them at least until the rest of the summer, even the SCG test, regardless of the result on Boxing Day. So, yeah.
Before we get into all the sport, we actually should just get in a little bit of memory lane with yourself. I mean, you're part of the Channel 10 team. A little bit of background for those that mightn't have followed your journey.
Yeah, okay. Well, I started off at a rival network, which we won't mention their name, but I was working alongside Eddie Maguire on that particular breakfast show for about 3 years. I did a bit of freelancing for Channel 7 News, and I've been with the Channel 10 Eyewitness News team for about 3 years now. So Brad McEwen, Jackie Reed, and Rob Waters there, SEN's very own. So, it's been a terrific... It's been a terrific journey. I never thought I'd be off doing this sort of thing, Brett, but it's been absolutely fantastic.
Is there a sport that is number one? I mean, if you live in Melbourne, I'm in AFL footy, you're immersed in it 24/7, or you're one who takes an interest in sort of a lot of different sports?
A lot of different sports. I am a big Premier League fan. I also really, like yourself, I love the Australian Summer of Tennis as well. I mean, I think that's just a terrific time of the year, and to be courtside at the Australian Open for one of the, you know, for one of the Grand Slams, I think Melburnians are especially privileged to be part of that. So I've grown up watching tennis, playing tennis, coaching tennis.
Yep.
So that really is a personal favourite.
In fact, Courtney Walsh has written a great article today in The Australian. Courtney's been part of Afternoons here the last 3 weeks, a guy who covers multiple sports on Stan Wawrinka.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the conversation of, you know, Stan, because the top four, the order has changed. Certainly. I mean, Federer and Nadal, what are they going to produce? There's a bit of an unknown factor there for 2017. But, gee, when we think of Australian Opens, I mean, if you were lucky enough to get a ticket to a Rod Laver match when Stan's playing, you'd walk away pretty satisfied, because he's lit up Rod Laver Arena.
And absolutely. I mean, he is the sort of player that really bloomed very, very late in his career. I mean, this is a player who has been sort of living in Roger Federer's shadow for a very, very long time. Then all of a sudden, he won that maiden Grand Slam at the Australian Open. You know, he's gone on to win a French Open. He's gone on to win a US Open. So for the talent that he's got, to win three Grand Slams and a Davis Cup, I mean, he really has been just an incredible player for Switzerland. And it feels like he's just getting better and better. I mean, he's the ultimate journeyman in the sense, I don't want to use that sort of form of tennis parlance, but he really has been a terrific, terrific player for that country.
Yeah, well, if you think the best shot in tennis is the single-handed backhand. So we've been blessed by Federer, who is just a magician. But I'd say Stan's is better.
Yeah.
In full flow.
Absolutely. The amount of power that he can generate from that single hand is just absolutely unbelievable.
Now, you mentioned the EPL. I mean, fascinating story on the weekend. I love the fact that you're never out of a job.
No.
In the UK.
Yeah.
And Big Sam's back.
Big Sam is back, yeah.
Big Sam Allardyce, who 3 months ago looked like he was cooked.
Yeah.
It was the undercover sting.
Yeah.
He'd lost the job that he'd always wanted to get, and that was the English management job. But now he's back as the man who can just get clubs out of the relegation scrap and taking the reins at Crystal Palace.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems like it's one of these things where, like, it's just a revolving door of managers. I mean, if you've just got to be the ultimate survivor over there in the English Premier League, you'll end up getting probably 10, maybe even 15 jobs at the end of the day. Alan Pardew just didn't really sort of go the journey, but I'm sure he'll find a job in the next sort of 6 to 12 months as well.
So I wonder what the pay at, because I'm sure that Pardew was on an 8-year contract when he signed at Palace, and he would be, what, only three or four years into that.
I'm sure there's some clauses in there.
It probably is.
I can't imagine a club would be paying out someone 5 years, but you'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah. No, you certainly can get a gig.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that was probably the shortest tenure of any England manager in history, the Allardyce tenure.
As we head to the break, in fact, there's one man we're trying to track down. So we've been trying to get him on SEN for about 3 or 4 years, and he's sort of gone missing at the moment. That's Harry Redknapp.
Oh, yeah.
Surely Harry's going to pop up.
Absolutely.
There's got to be another gig for Harry.
He's the
approaching
ultimate journeyman.
70, but there's another gig there somewhere. David in Rover, we're just comparing backhands, BP, Stan versus Gasquet for the best-looking backhand. Oh. Stan Wynn. He's got a fine backhand, Richard Gasquet. He's been one of the most frustrating players, to be totally honest. He's been in the top 10. He's dipped out of the top 10.
Yep.
Sublime talent who just on the big stage hasn't quite been able to get it done. But he's right up there with Vavrinka. Vavrinka just a little bit more menacing, though, with the back end.
Yeah, number one junior, I think, wasn't he, Richard Gasquet? And same with Gael Monfils as well. He's a very, very frustrating one for me because he's had so much flair. He promised to deliver so much as a junior, but he's never made a Grand Slam final, either has Gasquet.
No.
Those guys, I think, are putting in the work when they get it later on in their career because they realise, gee whiz, I've had all this potential. I've got all this talent,
yep.
But I really need to cash in now because all these players start catching up. You know, the Kyrgiosses of the world, Dominic Thiem, you know, he's a potential Grand Slam winner as well. And of course, you know, the likes of Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic and those sort of guys.
Lucas Pouille,
he's
the Frenchman we need to keep an eye on. He's been training with Roger Federer in the last week over in Dubai before they hit our shores here in Australia. We've been bringing up a few topics. If you're just getting up on this Boxing Day morning, we'd love to know what you did on Christmas Day, what happened in your household. Your favourite day, we've been sort of having a conversation on that. AFL Grand Final Day, Boxing Day, your favourite day on the Australian sporting calendar. 9, 4, 2, 9, 11, 16. And tonight, of course, we're going to look at the Melbourne Stars. For the first time, I think the Big Bash started, about a week ago? So we had to wait a little while. Kevin Peterson won't play in the opener. It's a good side, down to Hobart.
Yep.
It's probably one of the, in the formation of the BBL, it's one of the great grounds to actually watch the BBL matches. They pack it out down there. They're passionate. Sangakkara back, of course, who needs some runs. That should be a good game tonight.
Yeah, I think Stuart Broad's in the Hobart Hurricanes squad as well. I mean, it's going to be an incredible event for this Melbourne Stars team. I mean, they have been the perennial bridesmaids for the Big Bash. I mean, we're up to BBL 6. They still haven't taken out the ultimate. James Faulkner, Glenn Maxwell. Expect Glenn Maxwell to have a huge big bash. I had a bit of a chat to him at the Melbourne Stars season launch last week, and he's really really ready to let his bat do the talking, especially after that whole Matthew Wade kind of fiasco that happened a couple of weeks ago. But one thing I want to just talk about very, very quickly before we head to the news, Brett, is I was at the Melbourne Stars season launch. It was at the top of the Emerson, and one person who really, really impressed me was the coach of the Melbourne Stars, former New Zealand cricket captain Stephen Fleming. This guy has got the culture of the group absolutely spot on. Basically, he got up on the lectern and everyone thought, I mean, we had sponsors there, administrators, a few fans, media, whatever. But he got up on this lectern and he said, our slogan for this particular year is feeling comfortable in your own awkwardness. Yep. And he said, I'm going to demonstrate that now. So what he did is he grabbed the mic off the lectern and he started just breaking into song. No musical accompaniment, no one supporting him. Yeah. And he took it away. And for the first 10 seconds, the room did feel bloody awkward. Everyone thought, what's going on here? This guy is just making an absolute fool of himself. Within 30 seconds, people started giggling and laughing. Within a minute, the rest of the team joined in. Within 2.5 minutes, by the time he got off stage, he got a pretty much a standing ovation. So what he's done is he's trying to borrow a lot from that All Blacks culture, a very, very winning culture, put that into the Melbourne Stars team, and hopefully the Melbourne Stars can take away their first BBL title.
I haven't heard one person say a bad word about Stephen Fleming. I mean, even when he played cricket, he came in as a really young captain. And I remember I read Adam Perora, who was the ex-New Zealand keeper, who was pretty feisty like most wicket keepers and fairly outspoken, wrote a book where there was a bit of division in the New Zealand cricket team on, I think, a tour of the West Indies.
Yep.
And it was a young captain in Fleming who was put in the deep end. And somehow he managed to just get everyone on the same page. I remember we spoke to Ian Smith here a few weeks ago, and he said there's been a few New Zealand teams over the years where the chemistry hasn't been great, but they've been able to go out on field and actually get it done. This would be the case for a lot of elite sporting teams where not everyone's the best of friends, but you find a way to work, and you need a good leader to be able to galvanise everyone. He's just an impressive man, Stephen Fleming. And get a feeling this is a little sort of entree to maybe a long-term job at internationally with one of the test teams.
Absolutely. I think he's got the pedigree. I think he's got the runs on the board, so to speak, Brett.
And SMS, I'm listening to you on my smartphone in Hobart on a jog, and it's 25 degrees and humid.
Oh, gee whiz.
There you go.
Terrific. Absolutely terrific conditions down there.
Well, when I was there last year, I mean, I've never seen weather conditions change so quickly. So there's this beautiful sunshine. We're on the top of the hill there near, I think, the old North Hobart cricket ground up there, the TCA ground, I think it's affectionately known. You've got Mount Wellington at the back, and all of a sudden, the winds had changed.
Yeah.
A little bit of misty rain had come over the top of Mount Wellington, down the Derwent, and the poor old people were trying to clean the tennis courts. They get the super soppers out and the towels and everything else, and she's just drizzling again, and it was just frustrating.
Yeah, if there's four seasons in one day in Melbourne, it's about eight in Hobart.
One of my favourite places, though, and good to have you on board if you're listening down in Hobart. 94291116 for createawall.net.au. DIY wall art. It's easy to install, easy to remove. Duncan McKenzie McCargus with me, and we've just been, during the break, having a chat about Boxing Day and some of the great moments. In fact, Greg Buckle has picked his 10 most memorable moments of the past 25 Boxing Day tests. And I was going through and you're trying to remember, were you at some of these? And the 92 Shane Warne spell, when I think he came into that Australian team in 91.
Yep.
He played his first test. This was the test match that really announced Shane Warne, as he single-handedly ripped through the West Indian lineup back in the day.
Yep.
It was a fair side.
Absolutely. I mean, I've grown up going to the Boxing Day test, as I'm sure a lot of SEN listeners have done. Watching Shane Warne develop into, from a great player into a legend, into arguably the greatest of all time. And the great thing about Boxing Day is that there are so many players that either it makes them or it breaks them.
Yep.
I mean, 1995, I was there for the whole thing with Murali and the chucking controversy, and I was sitting at the back, the third tier of the Ponsford stand with my dad and my brother, and we were watching what was unfolding, and no one could really understand what was happening. We saw Darryl Hare putting his arm out and saying no ball, and we're thinking, what's going on here? He's not overstepping.
Mm.
And there was a few rumblings in the crowd as to what was going on. Yep. The radio commentators couldn't really pick it up.
And then in stepped Arjuna.
Absolutely. But that was probably one of the most poignant moments of the Boxing Day test. And then my other favourite one was in 1999 when I was sitting in the Great Southern Stand and I was watching Brett Lederboe.
Yep.
And he was this huge, fast tearaway kid, you know, with blonde locks, and he was coming in and he was bowling short ones, he was pitching them up, and he managed to get five for it at the end of the day.
Yeah, 5 for 47 on that day. So we'd love to take some calls up until 8 o'clock, 94291116. How do you rank the great moments? I mean, obviously, Warney's 700th on that Raw that particular day. We're going to play some audio a little bit later on of Andrew Strauss, who didn't want to be Warney's bunny that particular day. And they'd had such a bad series, England. They were hoping the MCG test, they could redeem themselves a little bit. And to this day, he still regrets the shot that he played, even though it was a beautiful bowl from Shane Warne. His hat trick, I mean, that the catch of David Boone. I mean, when we think of just the great sporting footage, that has got to be right up there.
Iconic MCG moments. Yep. I mean, that would definitely have to be in the top three. I mean, and especially the lead up, Tony Gregg's call to it as well was absolutely, that's gone into sporting folklore.
Yeah.
So it's all about those moments and sort of who takes them. But to tell you what, Shane Warne, I mean, they've got to name a stand after him, don't they? I think that Great Southern Stand, that's got to become the Shane Warne stand up there and up near Bay 13.
Well, he's got enough, hasn't he?
Oh, well, you can hear him everywhere on the radio, TV, everywhere these days, don't you? So, yeah.
And at Coldplay the other night.
Absolutely.
Just couldn't help himself to get up there.
What a terrific that was. He's very, very good friends with Chris Martin, isn't
he? And so often we haven't seen the internationals star on Boxing Day, except back in 2003, one of the best knocks you'll ever see was Virender Sehwag, who we love seeing opening the batting. I mean, we go back to when Sri Lanka are emerging with Kilawathana and Jayasuriya and those one-day internationals, and then in stepped Virender, 195, 25 fours and five sixes, four for 329. It's almost like that was the time when India announce themselves in this country, that we've been pushovers in the past. We're sick of coming here and just rolling over. We're actually going to stand up. And Ganguly, I think, was captain back in 2003. And there was a man who just lit it up from ball one.
Absolutely. And the thing about the Indian crowd is they're almost louder than the Australian crowd. I mean, whenever there was a wicket or whenever there was a big six. The one thing I do remember about that innings, Brett, though, is when Virender Sehwag tried to hit the massive six to bring up the double ton. And then he got caught out or bowled, I think. So, that was a pivotal moment in that particular game. But there was some huge scores in that game. I think that was an absolute road, that pitch. I think Ricky Ponting scored a double ton.
257. Matty Hayden made 136. So Australia made 558 in that test.
Exactly. And I think we went on to win the game as well. Mm. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what the curators have done for the particular pitch today. I think it's a little bit greener than usual, so they might be in it for the bowlers, at least for that first session.
Unfortunately, we don't get to see James Pattinson, who also made a great debut, 4 for 53 against India back in 2011. That is one of the great, you know, if we're looking for things we really want to see in 2017, the world of sport, I reckon almost, I haven't compiled this, I might do this throughout the week, But Pattinson and Cummins, I just want to see the two of them together.
Absolutely.
It's going to be somewhere in the top five of the things we want to see in sport in 2017.
It is so incredibly frustrating with those two. I mean, especially with James Pattinson. He bowls with incredible shape. He's got great lines. He's very, very aggressive. And he gets up in the bowler's face. He doesn't mind a bit of argy-bargy. So the great thing about Pattinson and Cummins is they're still so early in their career, so there's a long, long way to go with them. So hopefully they can get out on the park soon, especially with Jimmy, because he's just been so unlucky. I think everyone was expecting that he was going to lit up the BBL this year, but he's going to miss the first couple of games there. But hopefully for Jimmy, he can really get a wriggle on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, management is a key here for these two. But, you know, when I've listened to Chuck Berry the last couple of weeks on Breakfast, I mean, his theory is if they're right to go, get them bowling. That's what they're there to do. And maybe don't take the over-cautious approach. And if they break down, so be it.
Mm. Who do you see stamping their authority on this Boxing Day test? Obviously, Peter Hanscom's coming in for his first Boxing Day test. We've seen the likes of Nick Maddison, who hasn't played in a Boxing Day test before, be selected.
Yeah.
And Jackson Bird, the selectors have shown faith in him. Same again with Nathan Lyon.
Mm.
Who do you see as really sort of making it their own?
Well, I think this test belongs to David Warner because his record has been poor. I know he spoke at the MCG on Saturday about that, and it's been lean pickings for Warner this year. I mean, he set such a great standard last year, but he hasn't made runs at the MCG.
Yeah, I think he's averaging less than 25 at the MCG, if that's correct. Yep. So, and what I think you'll find is with David Warner is he'll try and get quick runs early, but I think he just needs to temper his excitement, curb his enthusiasm. The curator said yesterday that, yeah, there is absolutely going to be plenty in it for the bowlers the first session. As long as the Aussies can see that through, then hopefully there's a big, big score coming.
Yeah, Duncan McKenzie McCarger's alongside me, of course, from Channel 10, who, a bit like myself, is on deck through this Christmas period. Had to work Christmas Day, which so many do.
Absolutely. Yeah, as you heard from last hour, I mean, I was at the Collingwood Christmas lunch there with Eddie McGuire and the 40-plus volunteers. 500 of the homeless and disadvantaged were fed on Christmas Day. It was a fantastic event put on by the Collingwood Football Club. So bravo to David Emerson down there. Shani Layton, the Diamonds captain, was down there. And, of course, Moana Hope, the star recruit for the Collingwood football side.
Yes, Hope and Glory, footy's a hot property. She's got some good airtime, Moana Hope.
And she's got some fantastic tattoos, I tell you what. Absolutely all over the body, and she is a terrific young girl.
No doubt. I did the exhibition game out at the Witten Oval late in the year, and there was just one moment that I think defined Moana Hope. She obviously kicked 100 goals for the St Kilda Sharks, and great talent, and she just crashed a pack. And on that night, I think it was, and we've had her in here, Katie Brennan, who came off worse for wear. And Katie's a fabulous footballer who's going to be one of the star marquee players of the AFL women's competition. And Katie was down, I reckon, for a good couple of minutes. Just absolutely crunched. Moana had eyes on the footy, but I think it's going to be sensational when it kicks off
February
3.
Absolutely ferocious. And Collingwood is, the men's team's actually probably in need of a key full forward, with Travis Cloak heading over to the Bulldogs in support of Darcy Moore. But Moana Hope, she's ferocious, she's determined. There's a lot of expectations on her. I mean, she really is going to be the face of this women's league. But nothing really, really fazes her. So I think she's going to be an absolute revelation when this competition kicks off.
Well, as Eliza Sewell writes today in the Herald Sun, she's probably more popular at the moment than some of the guys. So that's how bigger attraction she is, Moana Hope. Now, just for a couple of SMSs that came through, we weren't having a crack at Tasmania. We were just mentioning the fickle nature of the weather down there. So we love Tassie. It's one of my favourite spots. I've been to Cradle Mountain, driven right around Tasmania. I'd go there every second week. Tasmania is the world's most temperate climate island. Taking the boat out to catch some crays. Merry Christmas. Regards, John. I'm glad you're on board, John, and we love Tasmania.
Absolutely. Best place to go for a road trip. You've got the Art Gallery down there, as you mentioned, Cradle Mountain. You can go down south. They've got some of the best beaches in the world, they reckon, on the west coast there as well. And Launceston's just a fantastic place to watch football.
It is. Sporting predictions for 2017. If you're up and about, because we need to start looking forward, the final week of the year, and things we'd love to see happen in the world of sport. I know you've got a few that you can mention off the top here. 9-4-2-9-11-16, as we start to look ahead, the things you'd love to see, and I'm looking at sort of the moments back. I mean, it's going to be very hard to top 2016.
It was the year of the underdog, wasn't it? Absolutely fantastic stuff. You had the Cleveland Cavaliers winning the NBA championship. You had the Chicago Cubs with that incredible breakthrough victory in the Major League Baseball. The Western Bulldogs, probably one of the greatest stories in AFL history, the fact that club nearly went under a 62-year drought. The one that I really, really like, though, is Leicester City Football Club. I mean, they really took it up to the big four, you know, Manchester United, Arsenal, Manchester City, Liverpool. It was a fantastic, it was just sort of like a David and Goliath battle. It was pitched the whole year. everyone was thinking that the Leicester City Football Club would fall down, but thanks to the likes of Wes Morgan and the unveiling of Jamie Vardy and players like this, they hung on. Claudio Ranieri, well, they're going to build a statue of him, I'm sure, in Leicester.
Even
after
if
this.
They go down and get relegated.
And one of my favourite moments was when they were presented the trophy at Leicester and Andrea Bocelli sang "Time to Say Goodbye." And the whole had, I think, they had people weeping in the stands. It was an incredible moment. Leicester City, they haven't gone so well this year. They're still in the Champions League, for that matter. But that was probably my favourite story of 2016. My prediction for 2017, Brett, there's a number. I mean, what's going to happen with the Western Bulldogs? Are they going to be able to go back-to-back?
Yep.
Everyone's, I think, picking a GWS dynasty. They think perhaps the Giants, maybe this is the start of something big for them. What's going to happen with Usain Bolt? How's he going to finish probably one of the greatest athletic careers of all time? I think in 2017, and I know we touched on tennis a little bit last hour, but my big prediction in 2017 is that Nick Kyrgios will eventually mature and eventually he'll find that discipline in his game. And I think Nick Kyrgios will break through and win his maiden Grand Slam singles title.
You get a feeling, just reading a few articles in the last few days, that the penny is starting to drop.
I think
so. The proof will be in the pudding, and Bernard Tomic in the same case as well. And I mentioned this to Brett Thomas on Friday night, looking back at the highs and lows and the things you'd love to see happen. So I suppose this can extend to maybe your sporting wish list as well, because we don't always get our predictions right, but things you'd love to see happen in the world of sport. 9, 4, 2, 9, 11, 16, because we all love a good fairy tale.
What would you love to see, Brett? I mean, I know you're a Fitzroy man, so you can't see a Fitzroy flag next year, but what would you like to see?
I have one wish.
Yep.
One wish, and that's for Roger Federer to win one more major.
Okay.
That's all we need. And if Roger could bow out winning one more, and it's not quite Leicester City odds. It's stacked against him.
Absolutely.
World number 16, 35, coming back after an injury layoff. But gee, we'd love to see Roger.
And he's working
one of the best sports people of all time.
Yeah.
Win one more.
And he's working so hard on the practice court. I mean, you did a Periscope or a Facebook Live session where you got a good insight as to how he was training in Dubai. That was absolutely fascinating viewing.
Yeah.
It was just terrific.
He's a star. A star act. I mean, he's talked about maybe playing on for another couple of years. I would think if it doesn't quite go to plan in the early part of 2016, he might review that. And he's not one that would want to go out and just peter out of the game. He'd want to go out on a reasonable high.
Mm.
So that's something I'd love to see happen. But, the more I think about the Leicester City thing, it is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Duncan, how it happened.
Absolutely.
And I watched the I don't know why. I was sitting there, I had about 10 minutes, and I was looking back at things on Saturday, and I actually went onto YouTube and watched the championship and the cup being presented to Leicester City and Andrea Bocelli coming out.
Mm.
I mean, I can't see that being replicated.
I can't see, I at least can't see it replicated
ever
for
again.
Another decade. I mean, especially with these big clubs getting bigger. I mean, Man City, Arsenal, their war chests are getting bigger. I mean, the transfer fees are getting bigger. The bigger players want to play in the English Premier League for the exposure that it creates. So for a club like Leicester to do that and to hang on for 38 weeks, it's not a short season. They had to hang on for 38 matches for an extended period of time with all the pressure, with all the expectation, with all the hype around that particular city. That was an absolutely unstoppable, unbelievable moment. My moment of 2016.
So that's like a Brisbane Lions coming from the absolute depths of the table after three horrible years.
Yep.
And to think, I mean, Leicester were down in, the championship, came back up, and then win the title.
Yep.
And so relating it to the AFL here...
I mean, it would be like the Brisbane Lions. It would be like Josh Shackey coming out and having the season of his life. It would
so
be
no
like
no one can predict. I mean, we went through it with Rowan Connolly 2 weeks ago. They're the only team he's ruled out for making the finals. And clearly that speaks for itself. I mean, they'd be coming from a very, very low base. We expect them to improve and be better under Chris Fagan. But it is phenomenal, the whole Leicester story. I guess it's probably the greatest story of all time, to be totally honest.
Definitely one of my favourite sporting stories ever.
9, 4, 2, 9, 11, 16. Any more predictions for you for 2017?
Look, I think the GWS Giants will probably start this juggernaut in 2017. I know a lot of people down in Melbourne will probably be rolling their eyes at the fact that all these draft picks are now starting to really reach their potential, but I just can't see them losing the premiership. I mean, you've got so much talent in that particular forward line. I mean, Brett Delidio, Jeremy Cameron, Steve Johnson, you know what I mean? Jonathan Patton. I mean, it's just... And then you've got that midfield, which is just absolutely elite already. And you combine it with a very, very good back line headed up by their co-captain, Phil Davis. I mean, Leon Cameron, he's another year in the system. He's got a fantastic coaching ability there. I just think they're just going to win too many games up at Spotless Stadium. And I think this particular run in the finals in 2016 is going to do them good. I mean, it was a heartbreaking loss to the Bulldogs there. I think that that's going to really toughen up that group. I mean, Callan Ward was seeing that crying in the rooms after it. And I think these boys are going to go from boys to men in 2017. I think it's going to be the flag for the Giants.
Yeah, you would expect the natural evolution sort of to continue to take place. Mm. And a side that's been building for 3 or 4 years. Oh, I just wonder whether they're, you know, sometimes you're in the journey when you're going north pretty quickly. Sometimes you have a little dip and then sort of go again. So yeah, I just wonder whether, you know, the chasing pack might catch up a little bit. But look, pound for pound, their talent is phenomenal. So they're going to be certainly a regular finals conversation from here. But
and I think the Cats will be stinging a lot from that preliminary final. I mean, they were the premiership favourites heading into that preliminary final week after they knocked off the Hawks in that qualifying final. They played 1.5 bad quarters, and all of a sudden, bang, their final series was over. And, you know, speaking with Joel Selwood in the preseason, he said that's still stinging the group a lot. It's stinging the whole town. Those guys were primed. Patrick Dangerfield was in the form of his life. But the Swans jumped them. They got out of the gates well. And all of a sudden, the Cats, you know, they're all on their postseason holidays. So I think the Cats have really got a point to prove in 2017. They've recruited well.
Yep.
And I think Chris Scott will have them ready to go.
And the role of a Dangerfield as we head to the break, I mean, it's great to have such a dominant player in your footy team. But it doesn't always mean success.
Absolutely.
I mean, we saw it with the great Michael Jordan all those years ago, and to his credit, he brought all the others into the game. I'm going to make you shine and you shine.
For sure.
I'll be here. They're going to come hard at me. I need you to step up when he threw the ball to Steve Kerr, knocked down the big three.
Oh, yeah.
All those years ago. So hopefully the rest, the support cast at Geelong can really stand up around Dangerfield, and they're going to be right in the conversation. Duncan McKenzie McCark from Channel 10 with me in the studio. Just a couple on the SMS. Ren's up there in Alice Springs. So we've got listeners in Hobart up in the Alice today.
This is terrific.
Just thinking about those great Boxing Day moments that we talked about, that West Indian Test match and Warnie's big haul in 92. And Ren says, what about Alan Border's 100 against the West Indies in 1992? Great knock against that attack. I mean, I suppose the Alan Border era, we just think of some of the unbelievable knocks against the pace battery, not only of the West Indies, but other nations when Australia wasn't at their absolute best. I mean, think about those West Indian tours and the, you know, shiny decks of Sabina Park over in Jamaica and Borders taking blows. And
he was the ultimate one who sort of took one for the team, wasn't he? I mean, because he was at the forefront when the Australian team was going through a bit of a transition phase. And Captain Grumpy would go out there and he strutted stuff and he'd sort of go about his work and effectively knock out a solid 40 or 50, and that would be the end of it. But I mean, the thing about Boxing Day is there's been so many fantastic pivotal moments.
Yeah.
To think that it just started off as a Sheffield Shield match between Victoria and New South Wales, and then it really sort of blossomed in 1975, and the likes of Lillian Thompson were taking on the West Indies, 75,000 people at the G, and now it's gone on to become a national event. Everyone around the country watches the Boxing Day Test. They sit around. If they're not playing backyard cricket, they're inside watching the Boxing Day Test. I was there in 2013, Brett, for the world record crowd of 91,000. When Australia played England. That's when we swept them 5-0. Yep. That was one of the great, great days that I've ever been to in sport.
Yeah, look, it's a phenomenal day. I mean, it used to be absolute tradition for as long as I can remember in our house. We'd go to the Boxing Day Test, and I've had a bit of a break from it. So today, I haven't been to the Boxing Day, I think, for at least the last 3 or 4 years. So
how are you planning this buck situation, Brett? Because, I mean, it's a very, very... Yeah. Got to be careful in these sort of situations.
Well, I'm not sure if there's reserved seats or we're just actually going to be in the bar, which most people who go to the MCC, a lot of people don't come out of the bar.
Is that where you're basing yourself, around the MCC? Or?
Yeah, in the MCC, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're getting there at 1 o'clock, and we're just going to see how the day unfolds, Duncan. I've actually booked a room here in Richmond to stay
the
night,
Lord.
Knowing I'm on breakfast tomorrow morning. So I said to the wife, I'll be home about 12:30 tomorrow.
Yep.
You'll be okay?
Yep. Keeping a close eye on Bay 13 and the huge beer snake that seems to wind its way all across the Great Southern Stand.
I think I sat in Bay 13 once. And that was for the 92 World Cup final.
Yep.
When
Pakistan and England.
Pakistan beat England. Yep. When Javed and Imran just took them to victory. One of the great days.
I was at that game as well. That was a fantastic atmosphere as well, because Australia wasn't playing, but God, it was loud.
Yeah.
You had so many English people there. You had so many Pakistanis, and they were sort of all over that great Southern Stand area.
Mm.
And Wasim Akram. Wow, what a fantastic effort that was.
Well, it's fascinating to listen to Waqar Yunus in the commentary box. I mean, he was a deadly Yorker bowler as you'll get in cricket. Always been one of my favourite teams, the Pakistanis. We think back to Javed and, you know, go back to Madassar Nazar and Moeen Khan. Little Kazim Omar used to come in the top order back in the 80s. Imran was him. Great.
There'll be so much excitement around the Pakistanis, especially today. They'll be making a hell of a lot of noise at the MCG.
Absolutely. Dean Crib Point, I never knew who James Vardy was until the Foxes won. Absolutely. And he's also gone on to look at his top eight. I mean, he's a bit like you, GWS at the top, Bulldogs, Swans, Demons the big one. I mean, the Demons and the Saints are the really interesting sides who are the next in line. They're on the cusp. Are they ready to play finals footy, or could they be leapfrogged by some teams who have been a little bit lower? And we've seen that in the past.
Everyone knows they've got the potential. I mean, it depends really on how those players, those B players, if they take the next step. I mean, Nathan Jones, what a fantastic leader he has been for that football club. He's effectively led that club, along with Paul Roos, out of the doldrums. Yep. Now it's time to smell the roses. All those players are developing. Jesse Hogan, he could be anything, couldn't he? If he can get his kicking right, if he can kick straight, he can become the dominant forward in the league. And then, of course, that midfield is just absolutely elite. You look at the likes of Dom Tyson, Christian Petrarca.
Mm.
Should go to the next level this season as well.
Add a Lewis in there just for, you know, that experience to guide that group.
And Jack Viney could be the next captain of the Melbourne Football Club as well. So, I mean, that Melbourne team should really be pushing for finals, but you never really know, because, I mean, who is going to drop out of the eight? Maybe a North Melbourne.
There's always at least one or two. So that's almost a given every year. But, you know, we saw Port Adelaide years ago, Hinckley's first year, go from 5 wins up to 14. We've seen, you know, teams in that 7-win bracket be able to make a rise. The Western Bulldogs, we wouldn't have picked it.
Mm.
You know, 2 years ago, to go from 7 wins to making finals to being premiers.
Let's hope those Magpies can get into the top eight there, Brad.
Oh, right. That's just been revealed. It's taken an hour and a half.
Yeah, for sure.
Duncan McKenzie McCarg has been in the studio for the last couple of hours, and a few SMSs just coming through. Morning, gents. When Dennis Lilley took his late wickets versus the West Indies, Kim Hughes made a great 100 out of 190, remembering his father had recently passed away. And that would go back, so we're probably talking about 81, I think, very early 80s. Thank you, Greg. Some great Boxing Day moments. Mouse says, this current team is no comparison to Alan Border or our teams of the 2000s who would have died for the team. Attitude is a serious problem. I can't remember a team of ours with so many smart alecks.
Gee whiz. That's quite a big whack, isn't it?
It is a whack from Mouse, but different times. And Australia's, I mean, in a pack of teams at the moment. I mean, we were sort of blessed, weren't we, when they had a dominant period there for
Hayden, Langer, Ponting,
a decade or more.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's an exciting time in Australian cricket. I mean, we can only get excited by this current crop that are coming through. I think Peter Hanscom really could be the next captain of Australia. I mean, he has got a great head on his shoulders.
And I just reckon
he lives and breathes cricket.
That baggy green, yeah, it really suits some cricketers. I looked at the photo this morning in the Herald Sun. Gee, that looks really comfortable. He doesn't want to take that off for another 100 tests.
He still looks like he's only about 15 years of age, but he's just got a fantastic head on his shoulders, and I think there's a big, big future for Peter Hanscom.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a New Zealand, I'm a Kiwi too, born in Auckland, been here since 85. Is it
Waiheke Island?
Okay. There you go. A couple of fans over there in New Zealand. Lawn Peter Pub, I know you're involved in that. It's a great event which attracts some elite athletes and those who just want to challenge themselves.
Yeah, I've got to declare interest here, Brett, because I do host, MC, and commentate the event every year. Emma Carney will be there as well, and Brad McEwen from Channel 10 Eyewitness News will be helping us on the microphone this year. It's Saturday, January 7th. It's been going since 1981. It's basically Australia's largest open water swim race. They've capped the number of entrants at 5,000 swimmers. And last year, we got about 20 to 25,000 people on the beach for what was just an incredible occasion. This year, we've got Mac Horton coming down to swim. Now, Mack Horton is the Olympic champion for 400 metres freestyle, and he's going to be coming up against a five-time winner in Sam Shepherd. So yes. Sam Shepherd's the local legend. Yeah. Mack Horton is the Olympic champion. These two are going to be going head-to-head at Lawn. It's going to be a great occasion.
Yeah, it is a great occasion. I mean, Sam Shepherd's been synonymous with that event. I mean, Mack Horton, I think back to athletes, and he sat in your chair, oh, gee, I reckon 18 months ago, one of the most impressive young men that I've met.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's very, very humble in victory. And I mean, I know he got caught up in that whole Sun Yang thing in Rio, but yeah, he is. And he came down to swim in, I think, 2014 with Sam, and he was leading the event the whole way.
Mm.
And then Sam, with his local skills, just got onto a wave and pretty much ran over the top of Mack Horton, ran up the beach and beat him by a couple of seconds. And Mack was very, very flat that day. And I could tell that it really hit him hard. And I interviewed him on the mic afterwards and I said, you know, you've got a very, very bright future in open water swimming. Little did I know that he'd go on to become an Olympic champion. But he took it all in his stride. He was very, very cool about it. And it's going to be a jewel in the ocean on Saturday, January 7th. So I implore everyone to head down to Lawn. It's going to be some fantastic viewing.
Yeah, and it's a great spot. Is it Lutet Bay? What's the main bay there? I think it's, I'm not sure they've got the pronunciation right there, but spent many a holiday down at Lawn. I think the Dogs were just there recently doing their training camp. They get a bit of strife out
there.
They
did. I mean, there was a few rumours going around that half the team got hypothermia from being in the water, and we were frantically making phone calls in the news desk around that. But it is a great time of the year, and it's a great bay. I mean, they get all sorts of people down there. Michael Roberts will be down there. There's so many volunteers as well, all from the Rotary Club of Highton and the Lawn Surf Life Saving Club down there, and Josie Malloy and all the organising committee do such a fantastic job. So,
well, that's it. I mean, you can have a holiday over the next 3 weeks and take in some great elite sport. I mean, we've been talking about it with Ian Cohen here the last 3 weeks, the Mitchelton Bay Cycling Classic, which starts on New Year's Day in Geelong. Down to Port Arlington, finishes in Williamstown. You've got the Road Nationals up through Ballarat and Bunyong. So depending where you are, I mean, there's some great sport that isn't always on the radar, that only comes here at a certain time. And to watch elite cycling up close, go and have a look at it. It's phenomenal, the speeds and just the tactics. And to watch it up close is great.
And watching the Herald Sun Tour last year when Chris Froome was down there. I mean, we're drawing some of the best athletes in the world to Melbourne, thanks to the Victorian major events. And to get Chris Froome, a Tour de France champion, down here last year, that was very, very special.
Yeah, no doubt. The darts is going to be on tomorrow morning, of course, having a day off for Christmas Day in the UK. So we'll be all over it here on Summer Breakfast.
And, can't wait. 180.
This is a sport that, you know, just continues to boggle the mind. I mean, the earnings now in darts is phenomenal. And having met a few of the guys who've come into the studio, Michael Van Gerwen, the world number one, Simon Whitlock, who's been flying the Aussie flag for a number of years, when they take you behind the scenes and their preparation, I mean, people just, you know, across the journey of Associated Darts, beer in hand, this is a pretty easy game at the pub, I'll just fire a few darts. But the strategy now, just the visualisation and working of the muscles, it's a bit in it.
And can you have a better night than being out at the darts? I mean, the crowd gets involved. It's a bit like the NBL nowadays, because sport is now becoming a sensory overload. Yeah. So it's about noise, it's about what you can see, it's about interaction, and it's about involvement. And I think that's another reason why fringe sports like darts, and I guess NBL to a sense, have really captured the imagination of a lot of the sporting public, because you do feel involved, you do feel part of the action, and it makes it a great event.
Well, to get the theatre goers to come along to your sport and at least sample it, they need to walk away with a best first up experience. The amount of people I've spoken to have been to the NBL, who have never been to the basketball, have said, what an unbelievable night, I'm going back.
Yeah, for sure. It's a big open-air basketball coming up tonight as well.